This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Orioles back after an off day yesterday. They're on a road trip in Minnesota. Baltimore baseball tonight at 6 tonight with the Bone and Jim Hunter. And let's joining us now on the Window Nation fan guest hotline, another member of our Baltimore baseball tonight coverage. He's an Oriole Hall of Famer. It's Mike Bordick, who surprisingly is not here in studio, but joining us on the Window Nation fan guest hotline. And Bordy, thank you as always for your time. I want to start where we were last segment. Jackson Holliday batting over 400 his last 10 games. In your opinion, has he figured something out at the plate?
Well, he definitely has the last week and a half. I think Brandon Hyde's putting him in some good situations to find success, and I think that's really important for a young player. Like where his swing is, I hope he doesn't get too caught up in the home runs that he recently hit. Yep. And still stays hard to the middle and stays within himself, because that's the name of the game, just to find consistency. And for a young player to find a little bit of confidence can go a really long way. So hopefully this helps him find that consistency.
Speaking of consistency, is it time that we consistently see Jackson Holliday go up against left-handed starters?
Well, I don't see why not. Yeah. And I'd like to see him. I think, you know, Mayo's up here now. Let him play too, man. What do you have to lose, to be honest with you? Let's find out what these guys have. Run them out there. Let them play. You know, I think Brandon Hyde and the hitting coaches – should have a pretty good feel for their young players. And if they think they need them to take a breath, then give them a breath. But you got to challenge these guys. You got to find out, you know, what you have. Development at the major league level now, if you're considered a World Series team, shouldn't be happening. These guys got to play, and you got to find out what you have.
Bordy, would you advise the Orioles to continue to pitch Kyle Gibson and Charlie Morton in the same baseball games moving forward, or should we maybe have a moratorium on that? Should we maybe implement some team rules in place that forbid such actions?
Well, I think one team rule should be that, for now anyway, Morton should only pitch in blowout games.
Yeah.
Why he comes in close games is beyond me. The guy's got to figure something out. And don't take a chance at risking a loss, you know, because of that. So a blowout game only, you know, maybe a mop-up situation, and you got to clean some stuff up. But that's about it. Gibson's here just because we don't have enough arms, right? So like I said before, this is going to be a battle of attrition for not only us but a lot of teams in the East and in baseball to find out how their depth is. Are they going to challenge some of their younger pitchers to try to keep their heads above water so that when players do start coming back, and the Orioles are one of these teams that are, Eflin's on the horizon, some other arms, McDermott's back, right? So you can possibly start mixing in and stabilizing some of the rotation and maybe reinforcements in the bullpen as well. And with all that said, other teams are hoping for that too. So the Orioles, bottom line comes, just play better baseball. Hopefully the starters keep them in the game, and the offense will start to come around.
talking with Mike Bordy. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Bordy, it's been pretty clear through this start of the season that the Orioles' offseason has been atrocious. They didn't get a whole lot right with moves they made, but it seems like they got one right with Tamayuki Sagano. Are you buying what he's selling?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why. Just because he's a pitcher. So he can execute. You know, it looks like he's got 4-plus pitches that he can throw for strikes. He works the edges. He knows the importance of keeping it out of the middle of the plate. He's got a split finger that we've seen when it's on. Wow, you can get a lot of swing and miss with it. But it's just another nice weapon. He keeps hitters guessing and off balance. And that's kind of baseball. That's what pitching used to be. Now it's all, well, the guy's going to make a mistake in the middle of the plate, gear up for 95 and higher, and let's take a rip, right? Well, it's fun to see a guy kind of carve major league hitters up with stuff that we looked at as below average. And people are still saying, 92 ain't going to cut it. I'll tell you what, if you could locate 92 and move it off the edges, it's cutting it. He's been the Orioles' best pitcher by far.
Bordy, going back to Kobe Mayo, are you expecting this to be a short stay for him when Jordan Westberg's activated off the IL, Ramon Urias, him being the corresponding move, or do you expect him to get a little bit of a run here?
I think this is going to be up to Kobe Mayo, to be honest with you. If he hits, they will keep him. But if he just kind of flounders and is still trying to find himself, I just think when Westberg and Urias come back, he's going to be out. But if he all of a sudden just starts mashing and you think, wow, okay, he's figured some stuff out. He's not going to be a detriment. He's not going to have the ups and downs, which is kind of risky to say.
Yeah.
But I think he could force their hand. I really do. So it's really in his hands how well he does and how quickly he can adapt and adjust to Major League pitching night in and night out.
Zach Eflin. Threw 58 pitches, I think it was, at Aberdeen the other day. I'm inclined, Bordy, to think he is going to be pitching for this team. If not in Minnesota, then certainly probably by Friday. We saw how quickly they rode Gibby up here, and Gibby didn't even have a Grapefruit League campaign. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think Eflin wouldn't come back. I think he's and I'm not saying Gibson. I think Gibson knew the urgency here, and if he really wants to pitch in the big leagues, he had an opportunity. This is his opportunity, or he was going to be sitting on the couch watching these games, thinking, you know, I could still do this, right?
Yeah.
So he's eager. Eflin can pitch for another 6 or 8 years in the big leagues and maybe be a quality starter. So I think he knows his body. He knows his importance. And he knows that he doesn't have to rush. When he came out and said, I felt great for the last week and a half or 2 weeks, that's all I needed to hear. I think he's good to go.
Yeah.
Bordy, the Orioles don't play a team over 500 for the rest of this month, but breaking, the Orioles are not over 500. Can the Orioles make some hay this month? Do they need to make some hay this month?
Well, if they don't, I think they're going to look back and say, wow. That we really screw up, you know, in April and May. So I think it is a great opportunity. There's going to be opportunities to get themselves healthier and more consistent and hopefully play a better brand of baseball. Eflin's, you know, reintroduction into the rotation should be an immediate stabilizer. Kramer continues to be a question mark, but man, you got to feel pretty good about what he just did, and he's finally out of his worst month, so maybe he can be more consistent. And this is what we're kind of looking for. It's just more stability into the rotation instead of just a hope and a prayer and like, oh, can this time he figure it out? Let's compete and get some frontline starters in there that are at least going to give this offense a chance. And then so that maybe we can blame the offense more. So let's see what happens.
Is this month sort of a last stand for you, Bordy? Because at some point, the O's are going to have to make a big move, whether it's Brandon Hyde or someone. We just saw the Rangers fire their hitting coach the other day. If they don't make a move this month, are you expecting the Orioles to someone lose their job?
No. No, I don't. I really don't. I think they are going to kind of work this out. They're only 5 games out, right? Maybe less now. I haven't seen the standings today,
but they're five games out.
Nobody's running away with this. Every team is in the same boat. And on a good day, the Orioles look hands down 10 times better than those teams. I just feel like they play better baseball. They just have to find a way to right the ship somehow. These guys that they signed over the offseason to contribute against left-handed pitchers have been terrible. They have to be better. They have to be themselves, and that will make other guys relax. I just feel like there's too much potential in this offense for them to be floundering all season long. So I'm going to keep believing in them. I just think the pitching's got to get a little more stable to give them a chance, and O'Neill's got to get on the field, and Sanchez has to get a hit against a lefty, and, you know, Lariano's got to find more consistency as well. I mean, let's go. These guys are veterans. Do your veteran thing and lead these young guys, and then once the young guys get the wind under their wings, let them run blindly into the future, because that's what we need. The young guys just got too much weight on their shoulders right now. They need other guys to pick them up so they can relax and play the dang game.
Mike Bordick, he's part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight crew.
Don't stop believing.
You guys
get me fired up more than anybody. Let's go, man.
Okay. Good thing or bad thing?
We'll be okay.
Are you going to come running into our studio like the Kool-Aid man? You're so fired. I know you can't stay away from this place. Are we going to see you before the end of our show today, even though you don't have to do BBT?
You know, only if you check into YouTube and check me out on the Be More Baseball podcast.
There you go.
Gary Coleman. That's the only way you're going to see me, but make sure you subscribe and like, okay?
It's a good thing you did that, because your boss is on in 45 minutes. If you didn't do that, Jerry would have been mad when he wakes up from his nap to come on with us at 4.
He'd be hoarding
me. Hey, get a couple extra Lito's pizza cards for me.
Yes. I got none.
He's hoarding them from you. Thanks, Bordy.
All right, guys. See ya.
Orioles and Twins start a 3-game set tonight. How good are the Twins? What should we be looking for in this series? We will preview next here on The Fan.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
I think those are things to be very pleased about. Our pitching did a really nice job overall on the trip. I got to be really happy with what we saw. Our starters gave us great opportunities to win all week long. So I think there's a lot of good that's going to come out of this trip. And some of those games, we're going to find ways to push runs across the board, and you're going to find ways to win games when you're playing like we've been playing. So overall, we will take it.
Twins manager Rocco Baldelli talking about the team. They have won 2 in a row, but they're sitting at 15-20 so far this year. The old friend Danny Coulomb will be pitching.
Nobody's hitting him.
He has not given up a run yet. And he's a lefty.
I mean, he's no Gregory Soto, but nobody's gotten any runs off him.
He's no Cino Perez either. Who then those two guys make about the same amount of money, don't they?
Yeah,
that was a good decision. So he's left-handed too, and they can't hit lefties. But alas, what do you see with the Twins?
Look, they've scuffled. There's no two ways about it. They're 24th in the league in home runs. They are 23rd in Major League Baseball in OPS. Even guys like Ty France, who they brought in there to be a professional hitter and try to improve their on base, it's not happening. Brooks Lee was a real high pick for them a few years ago. He's only got a 319 on base. They thought he'd be a high on base guy. Like, Buxton's their best player. It's not even close. He's got a sub 300 on base. So, like, if they're walking a bunch of guys and people are running all over Adley, it's taking some real doing from their pitching staff, because these guys are kind of like the Orioles. They don't really want to have long at-bats. They're up there to hack. They're not particularly great at it in terms of power. And Buxton is healthy for now. And he's the danger man. Harrison Bader's having a really nice season for them. And that's really about it from the hitting department. You know, Kepler's a guy who used to hit the O's pretty well. He's not there anymore. They moved off of a couple of former prospects as well and kind of tried to change the dynamic of their team, because we saw them. They were waving the white flag when the Orioles came through there. Was it September of last year? And again, it hasn't really worked out for them. Now, I will say this. They are 9-6 at home. They've been miserable on the road, but they've obviously been okay at home. And the Orioles are, it's not a great pitching staff, but the Orioles are going to face the three best starters that they have. And so that could be problematic. And for what it's worth, Royce Lewis has MVP level talent. Royce Lewis is never playing baseball because Royce Lewis is always hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Royce Lewis got activated from the IL this week, so I would assume Royce Lewis is going to be making his season debut
tonight
in this series tonight, and he can be a five-tool impactful baseball player.
Now, that all being said, we've heard a lot in the past week or 2 weeks how, oh, it's a soft May for the Orioles. It's a soft May. Well, you have this unique opportunity of playing the Twins in
twice.
Two series in the next week, because they come to Baltimore next week. If the O's are going to make a move, you got to win these.
If you don't take 4 or 6 from the Twins, it's further certification that you, in fact, are worse than most teams in Major League Baseball. They have performed worse than most teams in Major League Baseball since June 20th of last year. And they obviously are one of the five worst teams in baseball since opening day of this year.
Yes.
It needs to turn around. And the whole schedule argument, I mean, how good are the Nats? The Nats, to me, are a pretty bad, flawed baseball team. They took 2 out of 3 from these guys. Do you think are the Royals playing particularly great baseball against anybody other than the Orioles? Seems to me the Royals are winning series against the Orioles and not winning series against that many other teams. Like, they've faced them twice already. The Orioles won 2 of those 6 games. Like,
those are 7 games below 500.
I mean, are the Reds a good baseball team? I mean, I don't know that they're... And now the Reds are hurt again. Austin Hayes is hurt again. They lost another outfielder last night. I don't know. Like, are they good or are they just better than this iteration of the Orioles?
I think the Royals are better than the other two.
Is Toronto
but
a good baseball team? Does anybody think Toronto's a good baseball team? Toronto's, for me, one of the 6 worst teams in baseball.
And that's what we're going to find out over the stretch. If the O's keep losing, then yes, everything you're saying is true.
Well, it just shows how bad they are.
Yeah,
that's why I said the boardy. You're not playing any good teams, but
yes,
newsflash, you're not good.
Exactly.
And unless they get, like, unless Eflin comes back this week and he pitches like he did before he got hurt and stays healthy, like, they don't have
the staying healthy part that's got to happen.
But they can't, you know, it's the old, you're only as good as your next day starting pitcher. They don't have any starting pitching. So how can you get a win streak going?
Well, and as of now, Wednesday's still undeclared.
Yes. Maybe Hyde will.
By Wednesday, I mean tomorrow.
Yeah, Hyder will probably give us some idea that tonight, I would think.
Yeah, and then whether they just go with an opener or whatever. And here's the other thing about the Orioles. Boy, they've had a lot of off. I mean, this schedule, the off days, has really been a huge subsidy. So, again, the bullpen is the strength and this or that. Well, let's see what that looks like when they stop having one of every 3 days off.
Yeah, they're off again on Monday, and then they play a long stretch of games. Looks like.
Yes, because, I mean, people tell me how easy the schedule is. I'm like, oh, it's easy?
Game.
Okay, you think what they've played is murderer's row? Because I don't. It's not like they've made a whole bunch of West Coast trips or anything like that, and I don't think the teams they've played are great, and they've had, between the rainouts and the scheduled off days, a whole lot of subsidies to get their lineups and their bullpen in order, and they're still one of the 5 worst teams in baseball. So,
coming up next, by the way, Baltimore Baseball Tonight coming up at 6. It's the Bone and Jim Hunter. The big news yesterday around 5 o'clock, obviously.
Bone's earning it tonight.
The Ravens released Justin Tucker, releasing a statement around 5 o'clock yesterday. Jeff Rebeck covers the Ravens for The Athletic. We had his thoughts on this next here on The Fan. Ravens released a statement around 5 o'clock yesterday announcing they were releasing kicker Justin Tucker. Let's head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline now, where we're joined by a man who covered Justin Tucker's entire career with the Baltimore Ravens, first with the Baltimore Sun, now with The Athletic. It's Jeff Rebeck. And Jeff, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So let's start with the statement, Jeff. What'd you think of the timing? What'd you think of the statement?
You know, I think everybody, ever since, you know, the banner first had the story about the allegations, I think everyone expected it to end this way. It was just always a matter of, you know, when would the Ravens make the move and how would they do it? And, you know, I guess in one sense, the timing was a little bit surprising given that they had said that they were going to wait on the results of the investigation. But listening to John Harbaugh on Sunday, you know, call it a football decision and acknowledge, you know, the potential awkwardness of having, you know, the two guys in the building at the same time and bring up stuff like salary cap space and all that. I think you knew it was coming probably quicker than we had thought. And, you know, for it to happen the next, 24 hours later, or, you know, I think was a little bit surprising, but it was going to happen. And it was just a matter of when they did it. As for the statement, you know, I thought it would be more brief. I thought it would probably be two sentences instead of four or five and just basically thank Justin for his time, but say they're moving on. So that was a little, I don't know, extolling his virtues or just, you know, it was a little more complimentary than I thought they'd be. Normally they stay pretty close to the vest and just announce the news, get in and get out. And they certainly didn't do that on there, which is, you know, obviously resulting in some criticism.
I want to delve a little deeper on that potential dynamic between the Looper and Tucker. And you wrote about it as part of your coverage on his release in The Athletic. Like, I had sort of this eureka moment right after, like a day after he was drafted in the shower. Like,
nice.
Yeah, because I think in the shower.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute, this guy still thinks he kind of walks on water a little bit. He put out these very defiant statements about this whole thing. I told these two, he's going to be in the building. They told me I was crazy. No, he's going to go in the building. And that would be a really weird environment. If you really do believe in this young man, the Looper, and you want to give him a chance to succeed, like Tucker's got a relationship with this long snapper. Tucker's got a relationship with everybody, you know, all the coaches. Like, it'd be pretty easy for Tucker to strut his stuff and make it really difficult for this kid, because we know Tucker's trying to keep his paycheck, so he's going to play every mind game he could play. It sounds like from reading your piece that you're kind of with me on that.
Yeah, I absolutely think that was a factor, and not a factor I thought a ton about until they drafted the kid.
Yeah.
And then you start, you know, Justin Tucker is fighting for his career.
Yeah.
And, you know, if were you really going to bring a kid in there and call it a legitimate competition? And, you know, did the kid have any shot about beating Justin Tucker in a motivated Justin Tucker in a legitimate competition? Who knows, but I would say that would probably be unlikely.
Yeah.
Especially with Justin. I mean, and this kid, Tyler Loop's going to be learning, he's learning a new holder. He's learning a new snapper, everything. This is different. I imagine Randy Brown will work with his mechanics a little bit, which is what they did with Tucker when he was a rookie. So, you know, this isn't going to be perfect. And then you got this guy in this building with this huge profile. And I'm not taking a shot at Justin by any stretch, but he is a larger, you know, this guy is one of a future Ring of Honor guy. Obviously, this complicates stuff, but, you know, this guy is regarded as the best kicker in NFL history, or at least one of. And, you know, is that really the best way to develop Tyler Loop with him still in the building and still in the conversation? And ultimately, I think they agree that this was just not going to work. You need to put all your resources into helping develop Tyler Loop and getting him ready for the start of the season. And as long as Justin Tucker was around, that was going to be impossible.
Jeff, I thought you did a great job with your piece on The Athletic. Just the complicated legacy that Tucker leaves behind. And you touched on the larger-than-life kind of personality and doing opera and kickers. They're just kind of in the shadow of things where he was in the forefront, and so many people were wearing his jerseys and he's, you know, all signing every autograph that you can. And then this happens and you release him. I guess, what is this lasting legacy? And do you think that this could keep him out of the Ring of Honor?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think we all in Baltimore understand and we know how hugely popular he is, and we see the local commercials and we hear the cheers at mini camp and at the training camp when he would run out on the field, and the only one who gets cheered louder is Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
And I think we understand that, but I don't know nationally they understand you know, the relationship Tucker had with fans here and with the city. I mean, he was in the city all the time. His kid goes to school here. He'd go to Oriole games. I mean, I don't think people on a national scale understand that. And that's sort of what I tried to get across. This is, you know, this is not just a kicker. There's no such thing as a kicker in Baltimore since he has been here. And I remember a couple years back, my family back at home in Jersey, they've seasoned the star, you know, I feel sorry for them, but they've seasoned tickets to the New York Giants games. And, you know, I met up with them for a bit in pregame, and my brother said to me, he's just like, I've never seen so many kicker jerseys in my life. And it's true. I mean, you see Justin Tucker jerseys when there's Ravens fans gatherings, you see a lot of them. And so, yeah, he was a hugely popular player, and we'll see about his legacy. Time has a way of kind of, I mean, we've seen with Ray Rice a little and how much he's been welcomed back. I'm not comparing the two issues by any stretch. We'll see what happens with the NFL investigation, what more comes to, you know, comes with it. But yeah, I think eventually he'll get in the Ring of Honor, as if we're talking just about performance, as his performance deserves. But I don't know. I think it may take a little while for everything to sort of calm down and to see what the investigation yields and all that. And you know, I think you go from there, but it probably will be a while before his, you know, accomplishments are celebrated.
Talking with Jeff Schreiber, it's Inside Access here on The Fan. Jeff, you have a unique perspective. You covered his entire career. Have you thought about, like, the beginning? Like, you, your first year was the Cundiff year where he misses the kick in New England, and so the next year, Tucker is an undrafted kid who comes in to compete with Cundiff. Like, looking back now and the whole thing, have you had a chance to think about all that with all this going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, I don't think people realize Justin Tucker wasn't even an undrafted free agent. He was a tryout guy. Like, he was there on a tryout basis. And, you know, back in the day at Ravens, we had locker room access for rookie minicamp. And I remember it was a big story with Billy Cundiff and, you know, coming off that miss and would the Ravens bring competition. So even a tryout kicker who went to obviously a well-established football, a blue blood football program, him being there was a big deal. So we talked to him and I was like, wow, this kid is pretty confident. You know, he saw the big tattoo stretch across his back. He was very comfortable talking to us. He did not seem fazed at all in an NFL locker room. But, yeah, from a performance perspective, you couldn't have predicted, you know, what's to come next. I mean, he, you know, for a long time, he was the, you know, of all the jobs in NFL and the roles people play, you could make a good case there was a number of years there who nobody did their job better than Justin Tucker did his. And, you know, you couldn't imagine what he would become as a kicker. And, you know, all that just makes the situation even sadder, obviously. You know, you don't want to diminish the, you know, the accusations, which are, you know, gross and embarrassing and all that, and the alleged victims here. But, yeah, it's just a sad situation that this is what's kind of it's come down to for him.
Excuse me. I know that there's not much to be made of a rookie camp, and especially for a team that's roster. Is this set? But did anything catch your eye from what – how these kids looked, and I don't mean on the field, but just, you know, you get these, you set eyes on them, you see how big or not so big Some of them are. Anything they said, any impressions from that weekend?
Yeah, I think you want to be able to, even if you didn't know who they are and you didn't know the numbers, you want to be able to look on the field and say, okay, those are their early picks. You can tell how they move around. You can tell how they look in pads. You can tell how they carry themselves. I just remember the year Kyle Hamilton's rookie minicamp, and we were watching him move around and just how, you know, how easy it looked for him, what a fluid mover he is, and how he didn't look confused or overwhelmed at all in his first practice. And that's kind of the sense you got with Starks and Green. You know, we had a kind of a difficult vantage point to, you know, the field, and obviously the stuff was very vanilla they were doing, but man, Green was playing hard. He was chasing down run plays 15 yards down the field. He was getting after it. You can tell why so many people like him as an athlete and not just as a pure pass rusher, a guy that who can set the edge and do a number of things. And And, you know, Starks is just going to be – he's going to be ready to hit the ground running right away. You could just tell how he moves and how he carries himself that none of this is very big for him. This is just another step in his career. So, you know, guys looking the part, I think that probably was mm-hmm. my biggest takeaway with the early round guys.
Jeff, before we let you go, I think it's only fair we ask you about the Mike Green draft pick in light of everything that was going on with Justin Tucker, because I feel like those two things have to be connected.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I think there's this debate about, you know, football reasons for Justin. And obviously, I think the Ravens said what they have to say. You know, could they have said it in fewer words? Sure. But, you know, you check a box when you make one of these moves, right? When you cut somebody, terminate a contract, you check a box on the contract for the reason you did it. And, you know, I don't know the exact wording, but the choices are usually salary cap and injury and character or skill. Yeah, skill. That's the other one. So if you're checking character for Justin Tucker and these investigation gets cleared, he gets cleared of this. You have a grievance coming right on your doorstep. So obviously you want to push this as a football decision. But we also know to say it has nothing to do with it is ridiculous. And I think everyone knows that. Regardless, they have to say what they have to say. But you think about it and you're like, if this was strictly a character, an off-the-field incident, reason, why did they just draft Mike Green, right? So that sort of adds to it and just the timing of it. And, they said they did their homework on Mike Green. I think even with the Tucker stuff now, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny, a lot of attention on that, a lot of digging into what happened and some of the allegations. So, you know, you have to think they understand the severity of it, and they need to be right here, that they did a thorough investigation, and they trust the kid, and they trust the background and all that. So, these questions are not going away, even though Justin Tucker will no longer be in the building.
Jeff Zrebeck covers the Ravens for The Athletic. I thought your piece on Tucker was good. Not your worst, not your best. I thought it was good, Jeff. It was good.
GG's a tough grader.
It was good. Yeah.
Well, as you know, I strive for average. I was always a C-plus student, and, which still probably exceeds your level of production on a daily basis, which I strive for.
Thank you. Jeff, you're the best, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Take care, guys. Have a good rest of the day.
Coming up next, we want to hear from the people. 410-583-1057. Justin Tucker, no longer a Raven. Your thoughts on the release next here on The Fan. Ravens have released Justin Tucker. It is Tyler Loop's job to win now.
The Looper.
The Looper is our guy. We're going to head out to the phone lines and hear what the people have to think. 410-583-1057. Chris in Parkville. Chris, you're on The Fan.
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Hey there.
You.
Great show as always.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, the whole thing, it seems like in the same time frame, letting Tucker go, and then they pick someone else up that has a little bit of a history there. It's pretty unfortunate, but I'm sure the conversation's already been had with his representation, with him. Hey, there's an inkling of anything going down in the interim or since, anything new. I'm sure that conversation's already been had, that he's gone,
No, I think we all appreciate the call.
If Mike Green has anything happen off the field, I'm sure that conversation's had been had.
Mike Green, obviously, if you're not aware, and I'm sure you are by now, but he had an incident in high school and then an incident at Virginia. No charge has been filed, and he denies it. And, he had a zero-tolerance policy at Virginia, then went to Marshall. Jason, you brought it up yesterday, and with Jonah Schaefer, just those coaches vouched for Mike Green. Like they did, it seemed like they went above and beyond.
They very much wanted to detail their, and Jonas even said how quickly guys called him back and how willing they were to just speak entirely on the record. And they vouched for their experiences with this young man across the board. And there is going to be a very unique spotlight on him.
Yes.
That's just the reality of the situation. And that's part of why he was available at pick 59.
Doug's in Perry Hall. Doug, you're on The Fan.
Yeah, I'd like to say a little comment on Justin Tucker, but first I just wanted to ask out of curiosity, were the Ravens the only one that drafted a kicker in the actual draft itself?
He was the second kicker.
Yeah, he was the second kicker taken.
He was the second. Okay, which was still pretty much out of all the kickers in college. That he should be regarded as one of the better ones, I'm sure, if he's only the second one that was picked.
Yeah, and they're very good evaluators of special teams talent. Yeah. Of specialists.
I heard
say.
He even kicked a 75-yarder this weekend and all. Of course, that's no pressure and you're just kicking it free, but still, it's good to hear that he can kick it deep.
If Beltway Ben is there watching, there's some inherent pressure in that.
Yeah, it's big
shot. Beltway Ben was at rookie camp. Yeah. That's no ordinary rookie camp. No.
And by the way, to make it clear, this was Randy Brown's choice. Just because he was the second kicker, he was their first choice.
They said Randy's flying all over the place, working kickers out left and right.
Yeah, so this was their choice, Tyler Loop, the Looper.
The Looper. Looper.
Let's go to Tom and Rising Sun. Tom, you're on the Fan.
Hi, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey. Good.
Hey.
Listen, Tucker hasn't come out and defended himself, number one. Number two, these women, more or less, have not come out and said, you know, they're not taking them to civil court. So you have to question. It took 9 years.
It's past the statute of limitations.
They can't take them.
It's 3 years.
Yeah.
Wait, so that's what I'm saying. Why did they come out now?
They came out because they were asked and they told their truth. They came out because Justin Fenton had a friend who overheard a conversation in a barbershop that was about somebody's wife who worked at one of these places who had explained to someone in her life why Justin Tucker wasn't allowed on the premises of that particular spa anymore. And the reporters started calling people at other spas, and people didn't know that they were calling other spas. And these women all started telling stories that were remarkably similar about Justin Tucker without having ever talked to each other.
That's the
origin story.
Yeah. You were indirectly.
Might have been in the barbershop that day. Might have been.
Just listening.
Might have been back there last week getting my hair cut. Might have been.
Yeah. It's a good spot. Hey, coming up next, man, the only way you can follow that is with Dr. Jerry Aloysius Coleman, MD. He's got a podcast. He's got opinions. He joins us next here on The Fan.